Hello, this is Janet Gowan welcoming you to another Love Letters Live, and I am in a totally joyful dither today because my guest is Anne Mahoney, who is a handwriting and forgery expert. Not that that aspect is the most compelling for me, but I have always been obsessed by handwriting. So I'm going to go right to you, Anne, and we can talk about a lot of things. I noticed that the scope of what you do under handwriting analysis is huge. But can you tell me how you came to this in the first place? Like, at what age?
Truly, when yes. I was a child, uh-huh. I read My Left Foot by Christy Brown, which was made into a movie decades
yes.
later. And I thought, how does he write with uh-huh. his left foot?
Okay, but you already knew then that handwriting was critical.
Well, not necessarily. I was just a child, and I was intrigued, and I was the only left-handed person in the family. So what was wrong with me or what, you know, lefty? But I didn't write like a left-handed person. All the left-handed people, in kindergarten.
I love this. Go ahead.
Mahoney has to be a Catholic, right? The teacher was a nun and pinned my left arm behind my back.
Oh.
And had me sit there by the hour using scissors to cut
things out.
Oh, that's
the worst.
Well, to this day, I cannot use scissors with my left hand. I use scissors with my right hand because day
yes.
after day, she took all the lefties and pinned our arms behind our backs. So I guess I'm telling you what vintage I am.
Well, by the way, can I just say I'm the same vintage because I started off using my left hand. And every time the teacher saw me, she would have me switch to my right. I still use both.
Right.
And, that's so, yes.
Well, for your listeners, though, let's,
yes.
you know, there's something that you can do. For example, if you can just close your eyes right now and envision yourself running into a field and kicking a soccer ball,
mm-hmm.
what leg did you use? Now, keep that in mind. Now, if you were to just cross your arms right now and cross them comfortably, as you know, with what arm, just pay attention to what arm is on top.
Right.
Okay.
You also.
Now, yes. Now, your right arm is on top and my right arm is on top. Now, try to cross your arms the other way. No. And you'll see that it doesn't feel comfortable.
No, it feels
normal. It doesn't feel comfortable.
Right.
Now, it would be difficult to do on radio, but if you did the same thing with your hands, if you were clasping your hands and you look at what thumb is on top.
Left.
Okay, mine's right. Huh. So there are many, many things that are left-brained, that are right-handed.
Indicative of what is natural to you.
Right. Oh. And so what's interesting is Dr. Norman Gushwin from the Boston's Veterans Administration Hospital many, many years ago was studying stroke victims.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed there was a certain group that recovered from stroke much more quickly. Now, this is before we had TPA and the marvelous drugs from Genentech that now can dissolve a stroke. This was when you had a stroke, you couldn't speak.
Right.
You had to relearn everything, like Patricia Neal did.
Yes.
But these people could learn to speak very quickly, and they could put the round peg in the round hole in the square. And what he discovered is they were all left-handed. All these people who recovered from stroke quickly. Well, what happened is...
And they were not necessarily left-handed before the stroke.
Oh, no. They were left-handed.
Oh, so he only looked at left-handed people.
No. He just said, why are these people progressing so quickly?
And what happened
was people think, I'm right-handed, I'm left-brained. I'm left-handed, I'm right-brained. No, that is so simplistic. It is true. If you're right-handed, you are left-brained. But left-handed people have language in both sides of the brain.
That makes sense.
In both sides of the brain. The corpus callosum
yes.
has more connections between both sides of the brains in left-handed people. It can make it more difficult for them to learn sometimes because both sides are sort of
activated. I'd like to actually do a whole corpus callosum segment someday because that is so interesting. What happens when you snip it, then you can use both
right,
hands.
Right.
But so...
There's a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. And again, she has you use your non-dominant hand. So how did I get started in it? Probably because I sat at the left-handed desk.
Mm-hmm.
So after I got away from that teacher, then I just went ahead and wrote with my left hand. But
mm-hmm.
I didn't curl my arm around. I didn't write like a left-hander would write. And so it was fascinating to me.
But you were aware of all this. I don't know that all children are.
Well, I think children are much more aware
of this particular
than we give them credit for. But the turning point for me was, you know, life is a series of accidents, happy accidents, and I cannot give myself any credit for this at all. I lived in Denver. I had a roommate who wanted to take a course in graphology.
Mm.
And that was on her radar screen, not mine. But she didn't want to go alone. So she said, "Will you come with me?" And I said, "Sure." I wasn't doing anything that night. It was after work. I'll go to the first class. The teacher was Gwen Sampson. And Gwen had been the White House graphologist, starting with Truman. And if we have time, I'll explain what the White House graphologist.
Oh, let's do this on another one.
You know, and so I wound up finishing all the classes and studying with this woman again in another class for like 2.5 years. My roommate lost interest and went on to other things. I mean, so really it was an accident.
You were really grabbed by it, though.
I can see that. She was amazing. And one of the things was, the first thing that happened was, okay, first I have to say on here so we don't have any lawsuits. I'm not a doctor. I'm not licensed to practice medicine. I'm not making a medical diagnosis. But I was the biggest skeptic. I was horrible. I would have kicked me out of class. I was a horrible student. I was the biggest doubting Thomas. I gave her the hardest time. I said, "Yeah, but, you know, prove it, prove it, prove it." And so I took her the handwriting of my mother and my father. They had just written to me. And she took my dad's handwriting and she said, "This man walks with a limp."
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, she is so wrong. She is so wrong. See, there's nothing to this.
Oh, he doesn't walk with a limp.
So I called my mom and I said, "Well, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I took this class, but this lady doesn't know what she's talking about." She said,
"Well, I can tell the chills are coming on."
And he said, "Your dad was fixing culverts in the road and he stepped out of this Chevy Blazer, this truck, into a deep, deep ditch. He can barely walk. He's limping so badly." And my father walked with a limp for the rest of his life after that. That was 7.
Did you ask her what she saw to make her say that?
Well, we could. I mean, there's a long answer, but I thought, you know, I thought, she's wrong. She's wrong.
Yeah.
And so the way I became such a convert is I tried to prove it wrong every way I could. For example, I would learn about honesty and dishonesty in handwriting, about lying.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would see dishonesty in a friend and I'd say, "See, it's wrong. This person is so..." And sure enough, that person turned out to be dishonest.
Well, now, so you're saying something even more, though. You're saying something about looking to the future because your dad didn't limp when he wrote that letter.
Oh, yes, he did.
Okay.
But I didn't know he'd had that accident. But that is a great point to bring up because
she had the dishonesty in her that may not have surfaced yet, and you could see it in the handwriting?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in love.
Well, but now here's the thing. We are all dishonest. We are all dishonest. And people say,
all have that capability.
When I used to teach my classes, I'd say, "Who in here is completely honest?" Right? And everybody raised their hand. And I'd say, "Now, this is a long time ago. Everybody has their cell phones now." I said, "Let's say you put money in a pay phone and $4 comes out. What do you do with that money? Do you feed it back into the phone because it belongs to the phone company, or do you keep it?"
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the audience said, "Well, that's a gift from God, you know. You keep it because the phone has eaten enough of our quarters over the years."
Yes.
And we get, but this one woman was a preacher's wife, and no, she would feed the money back into the phones. I said, "Okay,
return a gift from God? That's like sacrilegious."
Yes.
Oh well, go ahead.
So I said, "Let's say you are going to pick up the birthday cake for your husband's surprise birthday party, and he asks you, 'Where are you going?'" What are you, now she's the preacher's wife. What are you going to tell him?" Well, okay. So then she said, "Well, that's different."
Honorable, necessary dishonesty.
Sure. So that's my point. All of us are going to be dishonest when Donna says, "How do you like my new hairdo?
Oh, or do I look fat in these jeans?"
Yes. Uh-huh. Does this make my butt look big, you know? And so, but that's all of us. Now, there's only 10% or so of the population that are premeditatedly dishonest. So let's take...
Which means what?
Okay, let's take two people.
Mm-hmm.
You and Joe Bad Guy. and you both go to work for the jewelry store, okay? And you're honest, and Joe Bad Guy had deliberately taken the job.
Oh, he's got an agenda before,
to say, when is the safe open? When does so-and-so go to lunch?
Right.
You, on the other hand, are, and yet you find yourself day after day after day, all these girls are coming in to get engagement rings, and everybody seems to be buying somebody jewelry except for you. You feel like you're the only person in the world that isn't getting something pretty. And so, totally not thinking about it, one day, because you show off these engagement rings, one day you go, oh my God, you wore an engagement ring home. That was not premeditated. You bring it back the next day.
As opposed to Joe Bad Guy.
Bring it back the next day. But some of us can be what are called social backsliders. So you may then wear the engagement ring home once a month for a year. Then all of a sudden, I'll tell you what, it's called pink collar crime. There are women who, men, who are bookkeepers in companies, and they write all the payroll checks. And they see everybody getting all these big checks, and now their child needs braces. And so they're just going to borrow from payroll, and they're going to pay it back. But then it so that is social backslide, as opposed to somebody who comes in and says, I'm going to rip this company blind.
Okay, so stop here for just a minute, because I want to move on, just so nobody's left in the dark.
Yes.
That you're, the main part, or a very important part of your professional life, is handwriting and forgery expertise.
Right.
So you deal in kind of a criminal world. When you need to testify, when you need to analyze.
Yes.
And so lawyers call you and...
Yes. Now, that's a completely different thing from handwriting analysis. I don't do handwriting analysis in court.
Oh.
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Forgery and fraud.
I'm so glad we're...
That's strictly detection.
Okay, so I'm very glad we're separating this out.
Oh.
So let's just talk for a couple of minutes on that part, because my own conception of handwriting analysis, when I first heard about you, was the guys who... come on to Perry Mason and testify that you can see from this handwriting.
Oh, no.
This
well, there are people who do that. And I'll give you an example. I have a friend, Maureen Moore, who does that. She did it in Denver.
So there are such people.
Yes. For example, there was a situation where a woman was divorced, had two kids, remarried. The new husband was sexually molesting the children. But he told them if they said a word about it, he would kill the dog, the golden retriever. So these two kids were being molested, but nobody knew. Now, they would go on the weekends to visit their biological dad. And he noticed when he tried to hug them or kiss them goodnight, they were pulling away from him. And he thought it was because the wife and the new husband were bad-mouthing
him
or something. And the wife assured him no. And the husband said, the original husband said, there is a problem here.
So
no,
how did you
no.
get through handwriting?
She's in denial. She's in denial. The kids would not talk about it. They noticed a difference in school. This is what happened finally, not through the parents, through the psychologists at school. They noticed these kids were being withdrawn and they weren't responding in class. So they took them to the school psychologist, even with anatomically correct puppets, because sometimes kids will point to things, but they won't talk. They would not say anything. So they got their schoolwork. They got their handwriting.
I'm going to cry.
And they got their geography lessons and their history lessons from before when this man came into their life.
Yes.
And afterwards, the mother had the old handwriting. The school didn't have it, but the school had the new handwriting. And the psychologist had taken courses in graphology. Said, look at this. Look at their schoolwork. It's repressed. There's fear. So then they compared the two, and then they took it to a graphologist, and she was able to testify before a judge of the radical shift in the handwriting, not because of age, they were younger or older, that's just neuromuscular capabilities, but that there was trauma, and that there was fear, and sexual repression, and from that,
they were able to
pursue. And they had, the mother finally listened. She put hidden cameras, you know, in the teddy bears and stuff, hidden cameras in the house. And
he was
caught on film.
Okay. That's just awful. That's just awful.
But
the
testimony that the court accepted was, you see, who do you listen to? Do you listen to the mother? Do you listen to the father? Do you? But when you have a visible record on paper, frozen in time, that shows a change, this is why it is terrifying that we're going to lose this.
We're going to have to talk about this next because, okay.
Yeah, we're going to lose this.
Yes.
And so they could enter into the court records these papers.
Right. So my question, well, I've got about 84 of them. Let me start with, so what you do is you are able to see whether something is an actual or truthful signature or not. You're good at telling the difference between a forgery and a...
Well, now, you're talking two different things. Graphology is...
I'm lucky I'm only talking two different things.
Graphology is interpretation of handwriting.
Right.
Forgery and fraud is just identification.
That's what I'm... Oh, that's...
It would be like fingerprints.
Right.
Did you
sign
this?
I was talking
this?
About one thing. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Good, okay.
And what I've been working on mostly, sadly, for almost the last 3 years, almost every case that's brought to me is real estate fraud and mortgage fraud and bank fraud with these robo-signings and the real estate meltdown. I worked on one case that had over 300 forged, notarized signatures in a notary. Just, but this has to be genuine because it's notarized.
Uh-huh.
Somebody just took the notary stamp and just
robo-signed
all these substitution of trustee or different things with regard to mortgages.
Okay, one of my guests, quite a while ago, told me the following. She said that she realized, somehow it came up in conversation with her six-year-old, that they were not teaching cursive handwriting in school.
Right.
And I've heard that a lot of schools are not bothering with it.
Right.
And she was very distressed. And you know, this is from an artistic, emotional, whatever it is that handwriting speaks to us.
Right.
And she said to her son, if you learn handwriting, you will be able to read the secret thoughts of grown-ups. And he was on board. He liked that. But I just had no idea how deep that went. I don't think this woman in saying it meant all this.
Right.
And I remember as a child, first learning to handwriting, I can remember the paper. It was just... There was something about it that was so compelling to me and such a matter of pride, and it was my own handwriting, and there was always the phrase, in your own handwriting.
Right.
And I remember every single I could go through half my third grade class and identify their handwriting today.
Mm-hmm.
Ann Yeoman's had the best I've ever seen. It was just gorgeous, and Judy Spicer's was curly, and everybody has his or her own handwriting.
Absolutely.
And it's yours, and there's no other... That's it. It's just...
But
I've always said it's like a fingerprint.
It is. Now, here's what... The chance of your handwriting matching anybody else's, and this was a study I believe done in Israel, is 1 in 68 trillion.
Oh, I read that on your...
There aren't that many people on the
I read
the
that plan. On your... Let's give your website, please.
Just www.annmahoney.com.
Okay,
but
let's spell it.
Here's what's easier. Well, you can go to www.whatmakespeopletick.com.
Okay.
Which is much easier to remember. It'll get you there.
Okay. whatmakespeopletick.com.
Yeah. What makes people tick.
Okay.
It's just easier to remember.
So that handwriting, you know, in terms of love letters, I always think if it's just got to be your handwriting. People say my handwriting's not very good. It doesn't matter. It's yours.
No, but here's the thing. Like you said, you could identify these people in your third grade.
Oh, when I'd see the envelope on the thing, I'd get so happy because Mae's here, Carol.
You get the envelope and you go, Grandma's getting older.
Yes.
What's happening to Grandma? Grandma sent me birthday cards. Grandma's getting older. And you can see the changes. Now,
but you still know it's Grandma.
Right. But there are people who will say, you know what? I just write like I learned in school. I just write... Okay, so let's go into the third grade. Let's take those 40 kids. They've all had the same teacher. Let's just do a pretend scenario. They've had the same teacher, first, second, third grade. They've all been taught exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have 40 kids.
That's right.
You're going to have 40 different handwritings. But why?
That's what I'm asking you.
Because 40 different brains took that information in. It came out through 40 different sets of eyes, 40 different sets of hands.
And emotional makeups.
Absolutely. 40 different personalities.
You know, I used to forge my mother's name on my report cards.
No.
I did because she said, I don't need to sign a report card. You always get good grades. Don't bother me with that. That's ridiculous. I should have to sign a report card.
Oh.
She had one of those, I don't have to show you any stinking bodge written all over her forehead.
Oh, okay.
And she wouldn't do it. So she'd say, you can sign them.
And nobody
same with health, you know, when you're absent from, she just didn't want to be.
Right.
Yeah, so I would forge it. And I was pretty good for an 8-year-old.
Wow.
And I found them the other day. Oh, it's
laughable.
They should have had the juvenile authorities come after me.
And the teachers never said anything.
Nope.
Isn't that? I wonder if they even looked.
I don't know. They probably just knew my mother. Did, I mean, you know.
Well, but here's why. You will approach an entrance to the freeway, a plate of food, mm-hmm. a phone conversation, a piece of paper, all with a certain rhythm and a certain energy that is yours. You're never going to meet somebody that talks really fast and writes very slowly.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I've been told when I'm writing and friends look at it and they laugh and say, I've never seen anyone write so fast.
Well, you're never going to meet somebody that eats really fast and drives very slowly. You will drive. You will eat. You will hit a tennis ball. You will hit a golf ball.
Your pace is your pace.
Your pace is your pace. And what this handwriting is energy, your energy from your brain coming out on paper, so that when you have, because I did work with the Vietnam vets, with mm-hmm. quadriplegics and paraplegics.
What did you do with them?
Whether you write with the pen in your mouth, the pen in your foot, or the pen in your hand, it's going to analyze the same. People will hand me beautiful handwriting that's perfect Palmer method, and they think, boy, she's really going to tell me that I'm doing terrific things because my writing's so pretty. And all I can see is lots of untapped potential, because they've done everything they've been told to do all mm-hmm. their lives. You get interesting handwriting, it's an interesting person. They've deviated from what they were taught.
Uh-huh.
So if the person can practice enough, the Vietnam vet, and write with his mouth. Now we have Desert Storm, now we have Afghanistan, Iranian vet. If they have to write with their mouth, if they have to write with their foot, remember, it's that brain that is directing the pen. It doesn't matter if it's in the pens in your hand, the pens in your foot, it doesn't matter. So that we can still analyze mouth writing or foot writing uh-huh. because we're analyzing the energy that's coming out of you.
How interesting. You know, that's that you're saying that, because sometimes in helping people write love letters and teaching people how to do that, because people will say what they feel, and then they sit down at the paper and they write something so flowery and bloated tortured, and I end up saying, just write with your tongue.
Right.
Whatever comes out. And the handwriting is bizarre, and it's just, I can see that it's
perfect.
Not.
Here's a perfect example. I'll have a person say to me, and I think I even have this in a brochure somewhere. My husband ran away with my best friend mm-hmm. 10 years ago. I was devastated, but now all is forgiven. We all get together. We're good friends. We've mended fences because of the children. That's what she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it analyzes. Mm-hmm. What it analyzes, what the energy coming out of that person while they were writing those words is what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at the words, and the energy mm-hmm. is low self-esteem, anger, despair, whatever. So I don't care what you write. I do say, write about something that's important to you. Now, people will...
No, excuse me. This is... Okay, so people can come to you mm-hmm. privately.
Yeah.
And get help with... Why would you be looking at this for this woman?
Well, a lot of times it's compatibility. People will bring me a love letter from somebody. People will bring me a love letter from somebody. And they'll want to know about them. And most of the time I don't even meet the people in person. I don't need to. And I kind of don't want to in a way, because people go, oh, well, you watched my body language, or you got that from the flicker in my eye.
Oh, you want people to understand that it's really from the writing.
I say, just send me the writing. That's all I need. And, children, people will want to know about their children. It's compatibility. People going through divorce. People who have a difficult boss and they can't change their job. They've spent so long at that company. I have one woman who's spent so long at the company. She's risen so high. People say, why don't you leave and go to another? In this economy, she's going to leave.
So what do you do there?
Well, you know, he's not going to change. So we have to determine how can she deal with him better. Okay, this you're not going to like, but he is a narcissist, and so narcissists cannot be wrong.
Okay.
I mean, if you go talk to a psychologist, you study narcissism, they're always right. Okay? So here's what saved her, and she said, oh, thank God, I thought it was me, and mm-hmm. now I don't get so angry, and now I know.
So in that way, she was able to be
right,
helped.
Okay. He's a narcissist. So then I said, here's what you do. Now, this is going to sound like manipulation, but here's the point. You can be right or you can be happy. You mm-hmm. want to be happy at work, you want to be right. And I said, if you will praise him mm-hmm. for his ideas, he will think you are brilliant for recognizing what a genius he is. And she said, I'm choking on the words as you say that. And mm-hmm. I said, I'm telling you, mm-hmm. if you just stroke him and praise him, you can have him eating out of the palm of your hand. And I didn't hear from her for a long time, you know, maybe 6 months. And she called me and said, well, I did it, and he thinks I'm a genius.
You know, that's so funny. Now, it doesn't even matter if he hears this, because no. I think when people hear it, they will never know what's
talking about them. Oh, no,
they'll never know
talking
it's him.
About me. I'm
right.
open-minded. Okay. I'm fair. I'm yes. not the one who's always right. And she wound up winning some trip, some company trip to Cancun, week in Cancun for something or other, and the boss was saying, well, she's indispensable, and we can't live without her.
Well, he certainly can't anymore.
No, yes. And he needs her. He needs that praise.
Oh,
and he's completely, and the other thing is, he has totally, and everybody says he treats you differently than he treats us. What's your secret? He has softened up towards her.
And Mahoney was her secret.
Well, he doesn't have to try to prove anything to her
right.
anymore that he's right. She just goes ahead and acknowledges that he's right.
That's amazing.
And so off they go. And she
and by the way, may
record.
I say something? I don't, you said I'm not going to like this because it's manipulative. I don't dislike it at all. And I don't even see it as manipulative because just like writing love letters, for a good love letter, you can have a not wonderful, unconditional love for somebody. It can be filled with garbage and ambivalence and anger, but you want to write a love letter to somebody to acknowledge the few good things.
Right.
Just as a gift.
Right.
And I don't think that's manipulative. I think that's a love letter. You can save the crap for later if you want to send it. But there's an
art to
writing.
Well, you don't love the crap, but there are parts
that's
that
right.
you do love.
So if you can say to somebody who's difficult, you know, I so appreciate that you fill in the blank. I don't think it makes you manipulative. I think it makes you, I mean, you may be using it to change a relationship. I don't think there's anything wrong
well,
with that.
Well, but you know what else happened is she can tell him things now and, quote,
he'll trust her.
Correct him
yeah.
or criticize him, but not in those, and he listens.
Right.
And
so that's
to butt heads all the time.
That's relationship improving.
Exactly.
Manipulative, I think, would be if you say something really untrue.
Well,
in order to get a
or
reward.
If you're trying to get something out of it, and
right.
all she wanted was a peaceful work environment, and she really was saying, how do I deal with this
You know,
man?
He probably had a great many positive qualities if he was head of a company.
Oh, he's a brilliant
right.
guy.
Right, and so to acknowledge those, I don't think is manipulative.
He's a brilliant guy. He makes tons of money for the company. He has brilliant ideas. And so the other thing she was able to help him do, because narcissists can't be wrong, and so he wasn't sometimes listening to other people. There was his way and the wrong way. So we did more work. She brought more handwriting, but she sort of showed him how to say, well, what about, you know, Pete has got some great ideas supporting your idea of,
okay.
now Pete wasn't supporting his idea
right.
of anything at all, but she was able to introduce
yes.
Pete's ideas.
Okay, so just like, I'm so touched by this, I'm also just overwhelmed at the reality of it, but really just like love letters, it's focusing on the good.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that can change a life.
Absolutely.
So I have one other thing. I wish you could sit here for a week. I keep talking. Will you come back?
Sure.
Thank you. I'm told I can do these and make them as long as I want, but people don't listen to more than a half an hour.
They don't have time.
Right. So, but I do want to say one thing, and maybe as an entree into the next conversation we have. When I was dating, I looked at handwriting, and it made a difference to me.
Oh, you bet.
Good handwriting, orderly handwriting. There's so many ways in which handwriting can be wonderful. And if it was particularly just psychotic
uh-huh.
looking, you know, I knew.
Yes.
And, it,
yes.
you know, it always turned out that that wasn't the right person anyway. And the other thing is when you go to the markets these
because
days.
Because what were you picking up? You were looking at the, even if you couldn't analyze
I don't know.
You were looking at the energy that was coming out of that person that was
yes.
somehow twisted or somehow angry.
Oh, there you go. That's
or
it.
Somehow
exactly.
negative.
Good for you.
And
thank
so you picked up on
right.
negative energy.
Right.
That's
I mean,
it.
You can sit at a first date and watch how a guy signs a check and see something.
Well, watch how he treats the waiter. Watch how
right. But if you're looking at handwriting, it is
yeah.
such, I want to thank you for doing this with me. I've got only 83 questions left out of my 84.
Oh, good.
So you come back?
Sure.
Can we talk about dating? And
well,
romantic
why don't we talk about, I worked for a dating service and weeded okay. out the married men.
Oh, okay. Stay tuned. I'm going to tell you goodbye for now. I'm going to just find a way to keep you here. And let's talk soon.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, this is Janet Gallen saying a reluctant goodbye. And please remember that if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, you don't. Writing a love letter is its own special occasion and apparently an indication of who you are, which is what you want on the good side. Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.